From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Unsealed yesterday, special counsel Robert Mueller's first big move, a 12-count indictment. Money laundering, tax fraud, false statements, conspiracy against the United States, charging President Trump's former campaign chairman Paul Manafort and campaign official Rick Gates for work done before they joined the campaign. Trump says no collusion. Then the announcement that former Trump advisor George Papadopoulos admitted lying to the FBI about his Russia connections while in Trump's campaign. This hour on Point, the Russia investigation heats up. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your question on what's emerging here and what do you see coming? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us first today from Washington is Matt Zapotosky, who covers Justice Department for The Washington Post. Matt wrote the lead story on all this for The Post. Matt, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So we got word first, of course, of Manafort and Rick Gates, and then came the George Papadopoulos news, which appears to be the more significant revelation yesterday. Do you agree?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, Paul Manafort is definitely a higher ranking person. Rick Gates is definitely a higher ranking person. But their indictment doesn't speak directly to this question of coordination to influence the 2016 election. Their indictment has to do with their own business dealings, helping Ukrainian interests or advancing Ukrainian interests in the U.S. Kind of not much to do with Trump. But George Papadopoulos, on the other hand, his has all to do with his work as a campaign person, as a person on the Trump campaign, and with trying to broker some kind of meeting with Russian officials. Now, Trump has kind of posited him as a junior member of the campaign, a volunteer is what they repeatedly call him. But I guess I would agree that in some ways his is more significant in that it speaks to this central question of coordination.
The president is today, after some Twitter silence for a while yesterday, today tweeting that Papadopoulos, who was a there are photographs of him sitting around the table as a foreign policy advisor to the candidate Trump. The president saying he was a liar. He's pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Remind us what he lied, they say, about, Matt.
Yeah, so he lied about the nature and the timing of his conversations to try to conversations with people who he thought had connections to Russian officials. So when the FBI approaches him in January, they ask him about the conversations he has with a London professor who purportedly has connections to Russians. And Papadopoulos says, yeah, he talked to this guy, but it was before he was on the campaign, he meaning before Papadopoulos was on the campaign. And also he thought of him as a nothing. Well, it turns out their conversations were actually while he was on the Trump campaign, and he hardly thought of him as a nothing. He sort of very seriously pursued this guy and others to try to arrange a meeting, possibly involving President Trump himself, then candidate Trump himself, with Russian officials.
So what was it that he was trying to arrange? Because he was pretty persistent about it through the spring of last year before we got into the very heart of the campaign. But the campaign was well underway at that time. What was George Papadopoulos? And he was a 30-year-old campaign aide there. Trump now dismisses him as marginal, but there he was. And what was he pushing for, Matt?
He was essentially pushing for a meeting, possibly involving the president himself, but it wasn't sort of exclusive to that. He also would be willing to have sort of other campaign officials, senior campaign officials, go meet with Russian officials and talk about foreign policy things. An initial version that he gives of this is that he's pursuing kind of dirt on Hillary Clinton in the form of emails. This London professor, by Papadopoulos' account, claims to have these. We don't know really what becomes of that. We do know, based on his emails and what he tells the FBI and his Facebook messages, that he was pursuing some kind of meeting between Trump campaign officials, maybe Trump himself, and Russians.
And he had said that the Russians had dirt on then-candidate Hillary Clinton. He also thought that he was talking with a niece of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, apparently that was a garble. He wasn't. I mean, Trump is not totally wrong in saying this guy is a bit of a huckster. He He has, of course, pleaded guilty to lying. He definitely overstates who this woman is. The government notes in his plea agreement she was not, in fact, the niece of Vladimir Putin. He also sort of insinuates that he's met with the Russian ambassador in London. That turns out not to be true either, though he was maybe pushing towards a meeting with that person.
The president now is minimizing the role of George Papadopoulos, but there's this photograph which is making the rounds everywhere now, which I think came out around the time that the president was meeting with your newspaper, the Washington Post, to say, I've got a foreign policy team, and here I am. And there's George Papadopoulos right in the middle of that photo.
Right. He came here and he announced to some fanfare. I should say that I wasn't in this meeting, but yep. He announced this foreign policy team and reveals George Papadopoulos, makes comments about he's a good guy. I mean, now they're kind of positing him as like this volunteer, part of this team that maybe met once. But I mean, you can clearly read in his plea that the FBI doesn't see him that way. They see him as a member of the campaign. And that's how Trump referred to him at first. It's sort of only now that unflattering revelations have come out about him that they're trying to distance themselves.
Now, we had the White House yesterday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders coming out after the indictments, Manafort and Rick Gates, saying this had nothing to do. These had nothing to do with the president or the campaign. Here she was yesterday.
Today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity.
And no evidence of collusion, she said.
We've been saying from day one there's been no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, and nothing in the indictment today changes that at all.
The indictments, maybe not. In total yesterday, do we see now links made that could be framed in a court of law as constituting collusion, Matt?
We're getting much closer. I mean, Papadopoulos particularly, he's in touch with senior campaign officials, Manafort among them, talking about this effort to meet with Russian officials. Now, to be fair to the Trump campaign, senior campaign officials, those above Papadopoulos, mm-hmm. treat this with some skepticism. There's some email traffic where they say, well, maybe we should just have a lower level person respond to this guy. And I think that this guy actually means Papadopoulos. We don't want to give this too much credence. We had some reporting in the past on other emails that weren't actually mentioned in the indictment, but showing how senior campaign officials were a little bit wary of what he was doing. But definitely his plea speaks to this theme of coordination. He very clearly was trying to broker some kind of meeting between Trump campaign officials and Russian officials. We just sort of have to see how Mueller builds this out, where he goes from here.
I mean, we have this report. Jeff Sessions, who was working as senator, then Alabama senator, working with the Trump campaign, saying, shut George down. We're not going to do it in terms of setting up a Trump meeting, I guess, with Russians at that time. I prefer that nobody speak about this again. That seems pretty firm, but Papadopoulos kept on his mission.
Yeah, and I mean, so I read that in the New York Times today. They had some, I think, campaign advisor speaking anonymously, mm-hmm. telling them about Jeff Sessions saying that. You know, on the other side of this, if you read through his plea, there seems to be some entertaining what he's doing. At one point, a senior campaign person, I can't remember offhand who it was at this moment, but says, good job, you know. And, you know, at the very end of this, they tell George Papadopoulos, why don't you meet with these Russian officials? Now, you could see that as them just telling the junior member, why don't you just do this? You know, this is beneath us. But you could also see this as them not wanting to completely shut it down.
Matt Zapatosky with The Washington Post, please stand by there. Michael Warren joins us as well right now from Washington, senior writer at The Weekly Standard. Michael Warren, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
How are you watching all this? And watching it, you sort of have to look at American political conversation these days in stereo, because you've got all of this coming out from the Mueller investigation at the same time in a lot of conservative, especially broadcast media. You've got an almost complete focus on uranium and Hillary Clinton and a completely different view of where priorities are, what matters in the news here in the last couple of days. How's this playing in Republican circles, Michael?
Well, I think with some justification, it's playing with the sense that, well, this isn't so bad. Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, nothing that they had to do with the campaign were they indicted for. This George Papadopoulos guy, you know, they're sort of following the lead of the president, saying he wasn't very important. Simply that there's no evidence of criminal collusion. And I think that's something that is important to return to here. the mission of the Mueller investigation mm-hmm. is to get criminal prosecutions and even collusion. Maybe it's dirty. Maybe it's something that voters would like to know before they go to the polls in November 2016. But it's not necessarily illegal. It's not necessarily criminal. And so I think that that's part of the reaction from sort of conservatives watching this. And the other part is what you mentioned as well, Tom, which is to say, well, what about Hillary Clinton? What about Hillary Clinton's ties to this Uranium One deal back from 2010, the fact that Bob Mueller was the FBI director and he did not recommend charges against several officials who it seems were could possibly have been involved in some kind of corrupt deal. But I think that sort of reflects a frustration and a lack of knowledge about really what's coming next from the Mueller investigation and a desire to sort of change the conversation to something a little less embarrassing for the president.
Matt, do we have reporting that indicates anything like a corrupt deal in the Hillary Clinton case?
You know, I would say that we don't. I mean, I think conservatives have sort of fairly pointed to the dossier and Clinton campaign's role in funding that. That certainly, I think, could be seen as a little unsettling no matter what side of the aisle you're on. You know, Trump has gotten a lot of heat, I think, fairly for entertaining, getting damaging information about his opponent from Russian sources. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton's campaign had tapped an investigator through some conduits to go seek intelligence from former and current Russian officials, you know, some of which arguably is just dirt on the president. I don't think, though, that that should distract from what Mueller is doing. You know, he's pursuing a tip, pursuing this thing, and he's going to, you know, follow it to its logical conclusion.
This podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Looking for your next great hire but short on time? You just need the right tools, smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 top job boards with just one click. Then their smart technology notifies the most qualified candidates to apply. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/OP. That's ZipRecruiter.com/OP. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Robert Mueller's first big moves in the Russia collusion investigation and where they may be pointing. Michael Warren joins us, senior editor at the Weekly Standard in Washington. Matt Zapatowski is here. He covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post, wrote the Post lead story on this yesterday. You can join us in this hour. Everybody's watching the news that tumbled out yesterday. What is the message that you see Robert Mueller sending here? And who do you believe on George Papadopoulos? The White House? He was a nobody. The photo, Papadopoulos right there at the table with candidate Trump. Are you tuned into Fox and just hearing about uranium and Hillary Clinton? And how will we deal with a nation being given wholly different stories about what's going on? What do you want from the Mueller investigation? Democrats have been talking about this, of course, for a long time. Some Republicans, too. But this was Adam Schiff, California congressman, top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, all the way back in September. Responding then to reports that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort had been already pursued by the FBI.
The allegation that he was reaching out to Russian oligarchs close to Putin and suggesting that he would offer them useful information to them while he was campaign manager, at the very same time the Russians are reaching out to him to offer information on Hillary Clinton, that is of deep concern to us.
We'll look at Manafort, but plenty of conservative talkers yesterday saying, hey, no, not collusion. This was Rush Limbaugh last night saying that Manafort's alleged crimes weren't connected to President Trump, but then pointing to the Democratic lobbyist Tony Podesta.
There's nothing here with Trump and collusion with Russia. There simply isn't anything there. Now, Manafort did do some stuff, maybe money laundering, maybe colluding or something with Ukraine, but so did Podesta.
Tony Podesta announced yesterday that he would step down from his firm after coming under investigation by Robert Mueller. What's the Podesta angle here, Michael Warren?
Well, it's essentially that Tony Podesta is a well-known sort of uber lobbyist here in Washington.
Democrat.
Was and a Democrat, I should note, and his mm-hmm. brother was John Podesta, the mm-hmm. campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. is also being looked into by the Mueller investigation to see exactly what he was doing, certain clients that he had as well. And I think it underscores a fact of the Mueller investigation, which is something that cuts against what both Republicans and Democrats have been saying about it, which is that it's if you talk to Republicans, it's a partisan witch hunt. If you talk to Democrats, this is sort of the way in which it will all be revealed how corrupt and how much the Donald Trump campaign colluded. And it turns out that I think the Russian interference in the 2016 election was much more widespread. Their attempts to influence just about everybody and to try to get to try to pit people against each other seems to have worked on different levels and with different people and with different levels of success. And that's something that ultimately these congressional investigations, as well as the Mueller investigation, were set up to do, which is to look at what exactly Russia was doing, how they were able to do it, and will they do it, try to do it in future elections.
Matt Zapatowski, what's the range of what Mueller is up to here? I mean, now you've got Podesta leaving that position, a Democrat. I mean, could we end up with an X-ray of this that shows Russians trying to exert influence across the board politically? Or is this first and foremost to be looking at the Trump campaign and that outcome?
So Robert Mueller's mandate is pretty broad. His first mission, of course, is to investigate possible coordination between the Trump campaign mm-hmm. and the Kremlin to influence the 2016 election. But he also has this side mandate, which is any matters that might arise from that. And he's interpreted that, from what we can see, pretty broadly. So he can look at Manafort, even if it's got nothing to do head on point with coordination and Russia, if it just has to do with Manafort's personal finances and his work in Ukraine. And that's kind of where Podesta comes in. One of the charges here is that Manafort is trying to hide his work on behalf of Ukrainian interests, and he uses lobby firms to help do that. They're not named in the indictment, but we know that one of these firms seems to be the Podesta Group. Mueller is first and foremost looking at coordination, but as other things come up, he's not going to sort of put blinders on. He's going to look at people and other instances of wrongdoing, even that maybe aren't on point to coordination. This all could come together in the end. You know, Manafort is a high-ranking campaign figure. Rick Gates was another pretty high-ranking campaign figure. If he brings charges against these guys unrelated to coordination, but then works out deals where they can tell him about coordination, this really all could kind of come together in the end.
Let's go to our callers, Nathan in Milwaukee. Thank you for calling, Nathan. You're on the air with Matt Zapatowski and Michael Warren.
Hi, Tom. I was looking at this from a couple different points. First, when people say Ukraine in reference to what Manafort was doing, the person he was working for in the Ukraine was Viktor Yanukovych, who was one of Putin's associates and fled to Russia when his own people gave him the boot. So this is a Russia connection, and also the false equivalency I've seen as they're trying to stir up dirt about Hillary and the uranium thing. This included an editorial in the Wall Street Journal mm-hmm. where they were saying, let everybody off for everything, except this Snopes internet busting website basically looked into the uranium thing a while ago, said it's not true, this isn't what happened. And in the meantime, you've got a situation which could very well be true in terms of Russia, in terms of the emails that they stole from the Clinton campaign and supposedly told this guy who did work for the Trump campaign that they had back in April before anybody else knew about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathan, let us pick it up right there. I mean, Matt, you've got sort of two streams going here. One is Robert Mueller doing his work. The other is the sort of conversation in the media around the country. The president himself tweeting today, check the Dems, you know, check the Dems. What about, does Mueller have to pay any attention, or will he pay attention to the uranium business at this point, or the dossier business? Is that outside his writ? You know, our caller says false equivalency is being raised here between the old uranium story and what Mueller's looking at right now.
I am sort of struck by the sort of but this response. You know, well, Mueller has alleged these things and I don't want to address these on point, so I'm going to say but this, you know, but Hillary Clinton, who is a losing candidate, like but her 33,000 emails, but this. I don't think that's going to distract Mueller. I think he's just going to keep doing his work. Optically, it I guess could create a problem for him. One of the reasons he was appointed was to sort of restore public faith in this investigation. Public faith and public confidence is an important part of what he is doing. He certainly doesn't want to become the special counsel just of liberal-minded people. I think he would want, at the end of the day, people on all sides of the aisle to respect and believe the work he's done. As far as the dossier, that is a part of his work. You know, that is to the point of collusion. That is playing in some respect to what he's doing. So he certainly has to take, you know, information about that and consider it and weigh it. But, you know, I don't think he's going to be distracted or deterred by conservative commentators bringing up other what they think are scandals.
Jennifer in Hudson, Ohio. Jennifer, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm just appalled by all of this. First of all, Special Counsel Mueller is not a partisan issue, and why it's made one is just shocking to me. I think that the appropriate posture for Donald Trump, and of course we know he's not going to do this, is to say, gosh, we want to get to the bottom of Russian meddling, and we are going to cast the widest net we can, and if we find out that Manafort or cohorts were involved in this, we're going to get to the bottom of it so it doesn't undermine our democracy. What is he doing instead? Weird tweets about Hillary Clinton again. But I guess more disturbing than that, since we know what kind of man was elected in the office, where are the rest of our constituents and why are they not standing?
What do you mean constituents, Jennifer? What do you mean by
The Congress, the Senate? Why are they not saying we are behind? We're behind Mueller, and we're behind any efforts that he makes, and being very vocal about it.
Let us pick it up right there, Jennifer. Michael Warren, how about it? Plenty of Democrats have been doing that. What about Republicans on this issue? Do you have prominent Republicans, Paul Ryan, others saying, you go, Robert Mueller, we want the whole truth here, or more muted, or even pushing back?
Well, I don't know if it's as loud and proud as Democrats are, and as maybe the caller would like, but most Republicans are essentially giving Mueller the room to work here. Paul Ryan has essentially said since July, maybe even before that, and I asked Paul Ryan's office about this just a couple of days ago, and they said same answer from July, which is Paul Ryan doesn't believe it's partisan. He wants to let it do the work that it's charged with doing. There's really only been, as far as I can tell, one Republican congressman, Trent Franks from Arizona, who has pretty much come out and defended Trump and said this is all a witch hunt and the Mueller investigation needs to be shut down. But, if more indictments come, it will be a question about whether or not Republicans stand up and say, particularly if there is more noise about, say, firing Mueller or somehow dismissing from the White House, dismissing what the investigation is finding, if Republicans will stand up or if they'll defend the White House and the president.
Byron in Blanco, Texas. Byron, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. So a couple months ago, I was calling in for the first time to say that I was almost certain that the president's going to get deposed over this. And judging from his reactions to this investigation, it's becoming more clear. We forget that there's a grand jury that's still waiting to investigate in the District of Columbia of an outcome of an indictment of the president. And with his back against the wall, I feel like he's going to make some rash moves, and it's going to cause him to get deposed.
Let's look at that. Michael Warren, thank you, Byron, in Texas. Matt Zapatosky, please stand by. Noah Feldman joins us right now, professor at Harvard Law School, constitutional law scholar. The Bloomberg story yesterday headline, Manafort indictment is the start of a complicated story. Noah Feldman, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure.
Do you see a line leading to the president here beginning to appear, or is that still a complete mystery?
Well, it's not yet a complete mystery, because you could imagine that somebody in the campaign told the president that there was collusion with Russia. But we're missing two steps there. First, we're still missing actual direct evidence of collusion. What we've seen so far is evidence of attempts by the Russians to be in touch with the campaign, not evidence of the campaign colluding back. And we don't have a tie yet between senior campaign officials and the president. So those are the two crucial steps that would still have to be filled in.
What would constitute actual direct evidence of collusion? What form would that be required to have to constitute that?
Well, you have to ask yourself, what's collusion? Collusion mm-hmm. doesn't just run in one direction. Mm-hmm. If the Russians were providing information to the Trump campaign and the Trump campaign gladly received it, that would not count as collusion. That would be one direction. Collusion requires coordination, something going back in the other direction from the Trump campaign, saying to the Russians, great, please give us this and this, or maybe you'd like to find out more about that. And that sort of evidence, direct evidence of that, would emerge if and only if there were emails or testimony indicating direct communication back from the Trump campaign to the Russians, making requests and engaging in some form of coordination.
So what about this summertime meeting that took place in New York? Does that, with Jared Kushner and more, does that constitute a reply?
Well, what we know about that meeting, you're talking about the meeting involving Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner,
yes.
is that Russian sources applied to the campaign, said they had dirt. Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner attended the meeting. They judged by their account, which is the only account we have, that there was nothing to the Russian information, and they walked away from the meeting. Again, that's the only version that we have. That is not collusion. Taking a meeting is not collusion. Collusion is when you go back in the other direction and you say, okay, great, let's do this together. Together being the key word. Let's have a coordination of some sort.
Questions for all three of you. Mary in Austin, Texas. Mary, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm interested in the timing of Mueller's release of the indictment against Papadopoulos. As I understand it, it was about a three-month delay. Mm-hmm. And I guess I have two questions. One is, what might be the explanation for why Mueller released when he did? And the second is, was Papadopoulos in any kind of position during that three-month period when he was cooperating with Mueller to, be sort of reaching out to other people and in a sense, setting them up, I guess, would be how I would put it. Or I don't know whether maybe he was too low a person on the totem pole to do that, but I'm just interested
You're
in
setting them up like wearing a wire, you mean, calling somebody and saying, hey, remember when we colluded?
Maybe that's not realistic. I know.
Okay. No, it's an interesting question, though. Matt Zapatesky, we just got you for another couple of minutes. How about that time between the arrest of Papadopoulos and the revelation of his guilty plea? What might have been going on then?
Yeah, I don't think that's completely ridiculous. So he is he's arrested in July as mm-hmm. he lands from a flight into the U.S. from Munich. He's arrested in secret. He then begins cooperating with authorities. And one of the reasons they give for keeping all of this secret is that revealing that he had been arrested might jeopardize what they termed his proactive coordination. And I don't think it's a complete leap to think that proactive coordination might be reaching out to people he used to know on the campaign and possibly, I mean, this has not been detailed in any kind of court document, but it wouldn't be completely far-fetched that he would be wearing a wire and recording those conversations. Now, by this time, by July, you would think that people in Trump's orbit would be smart enough not to be talking about this with some 30-year-old who, was a foreign policy mm-hmm. advisor on the campaign. You'd think they'd be smart enough to not talk about this with anyone except their lawyers. But I don't think that totally far-fetched. The reason that prosecutors gave for keeping his case under seal was that he was a proactive cooperator. Now, when someone is arrested and charged, they're under a lot of pressure to make it public, and the American justice system is supposed to be public. You can't have people secretly charged forever. As to why Monday was the day they decide to reveal his plea and also unseal this indictment of Manafort, it might be that they just got everything that they need from him. And so there's no reason that they can sort of feasibly offer any more to keep it secret.
Noah Feldman, we want to dig on in here, but top level, what do you see in yesterday's revelations? The frame of an aggressive investigation that may go deep, or disappointment, or not much.
I think what we see is there are two directions that Mueller is clearly following. One is we now know definitively that the Russians were, as it were, trailing their coats, trying to get the Trump campaign to talk to them, and mm-hmm. he's trying to track down all the instances of that. That's the Papadopoulos angle.
Yep.
The other angle is that there are individuals in the Trump campaign, Paul Manafort's the latest example, although one could easily imagine General Flynn as well, who are vulnerable because they committed crimes. And so pressure will be put on them to see whether they have independent information. And so that's the second angle. So I think what we're seeing now are two of the core directions that the Mueller investigation is going in.
Noah Feldman at Harvard Law School, please stand by there. It's great to have you with us. And Michael Warren at the Weekly Standard. Matt Zapatosky, Justice Department correspondent, reporter for the Washington Post. Matt, it's been terrific having you with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Robert Mueller's first big moves in the Russia collusion investigation and where they may be pointing. Noah Feldman joins us, professor at Harvard Law School, constitutional law scholar. He's been following this very closely, got the legal view of the options and what's indicated in Mueller's first moves here. Michael Warren covering this as well for the Weekly Standard with us from Washington today. Has been all over this as well. What did you hear or see in the indictment yesterday, the guilty plea, and what do you want out of this investigation? I mean, lots of anticipation here. This is all the way back in September. You had James Clapper, former director of national intelligence under President Obama, telling CNN, September 20th this was, he thinks Russia would have welcomed Paul Manafort's offer to brief a top Russian oligarch on Donald Trump's presidential campaign.
If they had a witting and willing participant who would engage with them, talked with them, who in their mind had some inside access or influence in the campaign, which at one point Mr. Manafort certainly did, I think they would view that as a favorable line of exploitation.
A favorable line of exploitation, the former director of national intelligence, but the interpretations of this over the whole polarized spectrum yesterday. This was Kellyanne Conway with Fox and Friends before the indictments even fully came out, calling the investigation a sham, saying, look over there. Look at the Clintons.
As the president has said, everybody's fully cooperating and we'll let these investigations. There are three of them, one in the House, one in the Senate, one by Mr. Mueller and his very expansive large team of attorneys. Going forward. But the president has also made very clear as recently as this weekend that he considers this a hoax and that people should be looking into any coordination, if not collusion, between the Clinton campaign, the DNC, this Russian dossier.
Kellyanne Conway still talking hoax there yesterday. And, you know, you hear the list of collusion over there. Questions for Noah Feldman and Michael Warren. Matt in Charlotte, North Carolina. Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to point out, there's going to be a tendency right now, obviously, for Trump and his base to, deflect, say, hey, Paul Manafort, his crimes had nothing to do with the campaign. Papadopoulos, he's low-level and he's probably lying. But if you, look back all the way to the beginning, we keep moving the goalpost every time we have this conversation. The original lie was, hey, we've never had any contact with Russians, no deals, no nothing.
Yep.
Then it became, oh, just Michael Flynn, oh, just Sessions, and then it became virtually everyone in his campaign. And then from then on, it became, oh, well, it's not illegal to contact the Russians, but, this wasn't collusion. And then after the Trump Jr. meeting, which had another million lies around it, it was like, hey, that's just normal politics, getting dirt on a political rival. We fired Comey, but it's not about the Russia investigation. Oh, wait, never mind. It actually was about the Russia investigation. And then, every time, the bottom line is they keep covering, they keep running cover for a foreign power that deliberately hacked us and attacked us. And every single time they talk about it, they have new lies. At what point do we need to stop and realize, stop being played for fools here?
Matt, stand by. Noah Feldman, does that matter in legal terms that indeed we have had to learn through journalist digging and other revelations about contacts that actually happened? Now, what happened in those contacts, we don't know. But does it matter to Mueller or to the case he's making that there wasn't full disclosure right from the beginning?
For the most part, it doesn't. I agreed with essentially every word that Matt said. I thought that was a very eloquent description of what's happened. But what matters legally is whether there were specific crimes. Now, if you lie to the FBI the way George Papadopoulos did, that's a crime. If you lie to the American people, that's the kind of moral crime that needs to be treated by impeachment or by, alternatively, the public voting you out of office. It's not a crime under the law. So what Mueller is looking for is specific evidence of actual criminal coordination and, alternatively, of obstruction of justice in a cover-up. So if those can be shown, and arguably the Comey firing could potentially be connected to facts that would make it that, then there's a legal case. Short of that, morally bad, not legally, punishable.
Michael Warren, we'll see where we end up here. Maybe there will be a legal case. Maybe it will go just as high as it could go. But if it ends up being a moral case, do you see the Republican-led Congress picking up on that and doing anything, something with it?
In short, no. I don't know what really there can be done with that. But I think it's important, again, to underscore that is an important thing to learn from this investigation. Whether or not something illegal happened, as something criminal happened, that will be determined by this investigation and how many indictments come down and convictions and all of that. But it's also useful to figure out things like what we learned yesterday for that in this indictment of Paul Manafort, that he was, at least alleged to have tried to hide this money through different means that he was
a lot of money, $18 million, 70 some plus he was moving.
Exactly. And I think we should remember when he took the job as the campaign chairman for Donald Trump, Paul Manafort did not receive a salary. And we are looking at this whole issue of, did Paul Manafort try to collude on behalf of the Donald Trump campaign with the Russians, or was he a part of some plan? Okay. But you could also look at it from the other direction, which is he had pro-Putin clients in Ukraine. He had some money issues. He needed some – I believe he had some debt. And this was – this could be a good way, his role on the Trump campaign, to make himself appear very valuable to those clients. I think that's, again, doesn't really fall into a question of criminality. But again, it's something that voters ought to have known and does reflect, I think, on Donald Trump's claim that he always hires the best people. Well, clearly this is somebody he hired, Paul Manafort, that had some evident problems. People knew in Washington what his career in foreign lobbying was like, and then the president or the future president only dumped Manafort at the end of that summer of 2016 when those problems, when the heat from those problems became too much for him to bear.
Now he's looking at conspiracy against the United States charge, among others, a dozen in total. Noah, how strong does the leverage on Paul Manafort look to you right now? And for that matter, his associate Rick Gates, was it stronger before these indictments came down? You know, Mueller saying, in effect, tell us whatever you've got or we're going to indict you? Or is it stronger now that they're actually facing the charges, Noah?
It's stronger now because before charges are brought, there's always the possibility the prosecutor is bluffing. Now there are charges which, if convicted, Manafort could serve 80 years for. Mm-hmm. So Manafort now has the largest incentive that he's ever going to have to cooperate and to tell Mueller whatever it is that he may know that would be valuable to Mueller. Of course, there is the possibility that Manafort may be thinking that the president will pardon him, which could happen at any stage. He doesn't have to be convicted for that to have happened. The president could preemptively pardon him. But the difficulty from Trump's perspective is that if you pardon somebody, they can still be made to testify. They can't plead the Fifth because they can't be convicted of a crime. So consequently, this is a little known fact. Once you've been pardoned, you're actually more dangerous as a potential witness against the president than you would be otherwise. So, you know, Manafort is now, he's in the, he's up against the wall. And if he does know something, I think the odds are pretty good that he'll tell it.
But if he were pardoned and therefore could not plead the Fifth and was put on the stand, then what's the leverage? If he's found to be lying, he could face charges on that?
Correct. If you're in court, any court, and the judge says to you, answer the question, Mr. Manafort, and you say no, the judge says, well, I'm going to put you in jail for contempt, and I'm going to hold you there until you answer the question. And so he could be jailed for contempt indefinitely unless he answered the question. So a pardon is a double-edged sword from the president's perspective here.
Michael in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Michael, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. The question came up earlier about Donald Trump, whether or not he had knowledge in advance of all this going on. The big piece that I have to say that I think people are forgetting about is I think it was in August of last year, he said, on live television, Russia, if you're listening, could you please find those 30,000 emails?
Yeah.
How could he just come out and say that without having...
Michael, you're cutting out on us, but that is interesting because there it is. We heard it last year. It was right around the time of the conventions. The president on television saying, Russia, if you've got it, help us out. Noah, what about that on its face? I mean, if Is that the smoking gun right on video?
You know, it is possible that that could be described as part of collusion if there's further evidence that Trump people in his campaign or Trump himself actually thought of themselves as in active communication with the Russians. There is some indication that Roger Stone was in direct message communication with somebody speaking from one of the Russian hackers' email addresses. So, you know, it's not outside the bounds of possibility. That said, Trump can always fall back on saying, and it's difficult to disprove this, mm-hmm. that he was making a crack on television as a joke. You know, there was lots of talk about Russian hacking at the time, and Trump said, you know, very possibly just offhandedly, hey, you know, if you got those emails, which I've been talking about at this point for a long time, mm-hmm. maybe you could find those. And I think it's almost impossible to disprove the I was joking version of that, because in context, it's a plausible interpretation of what he said.
So at this point, how do you see this shaping up, Noah Feldman? We've got these first, you know, steps that the public is we're aware of now. Do they suggest to you a lot more to come, or still we have no idea? And in terms of Mueller's strategy, what do they tell you?
I think there are really two ways this could go. In one, the one that some Democrats are excited about, the chain of money and ultimately the chain of connection with Russia deepens with each revelation. And eventually it's tied to the top of the Trump campaign, to coordination in two directions, and potentially even to the president. Now, that will then raise the huge question of whether Congress would take action. And, you know, we don't know, but I don't think it's by any means certain that even under those circumstances, Congress would take action. But
even if there were charges connected to those revelations, should they have come forward?
There wouldn't be criminal charges against the president, who's a sitting president and is almost certainly not likely to be charged. And that would mean it would be up to Congress, which at the time could be a Republican Congress or a Democratic yeah. Congress, to move articles of impeachment. And I don't think there's any guarantee that a Republican Congress would do so. But that's one direction this could go. The other direction, the one that's better from the Trump administration's perspective, is that we get individual people arrested, as with Manafort. We maybe find more indications of efforts by the Russians to be in touch with the campaign. And the fact that there are so many such efforts does lend some credence to the idea that the Russians were not actually coordinating with the campaign. They were mm-hmm. trying to coordinate with the campaign from many angles. Maybe that's a sign that they weren't actually doing it. And then eventually the investigation will sort of peter out with some convictions, some indications of extensive Russian efforts, but no hard evidence of collusion. And no hard evidence under those circumstances of an obstruction of justice cover-up led by the president. And if that happens, that's a win for the Trump administration.
Michael, if there does come forward the investigation with evidence of, you know, reciprocal collusion here, reciprocal action, and it's got charges attached to it, how high, to your mind, would it need to go? If the president won't be charged, how high would it need to go before Congress, let's say a Republican-led Congress, would say we have to do something here?
Well, the question again is, what would that Republican Congress do? I mean, are they going to bring articles of impeachment against the president if, say, it goes all the way up to somebody like a campaign chairman or a campaign manager? I don't know.
I mean, articles of impeachment were brought against Bill Clinton for lying about sexual dalliance.
Right.
It seems like a different order than colluding over the election of the leader of the country.
Yeah, but the issue there, of course, was lying under oath. And so I think it would have to be something like along those lines if the president were to be deposed in this. But it's hard to speculate. I think at this point you can only look at what we know so far. And it's important to remember the Mueller investigation has kept things under lock and key. We did not know much at all about the George Papadopoulos mm-hmm. guilty plea until 3 weeks after he signed it. If you look at that guilty plea, you can see that this is there's a hint at something bigger here going on, and it's easier, I think, to just look at what that says. It said that after his arrest, Papadopoulos' arrest mm-hmm. in July of 2017, he, quote, met with the government on numerous occasions to provide information and answer questions. I think the best that we can sort of game this out is to say there seems to be a lot more here that the Mueller investigation is looking to drag out to get as much information as possible.
Noah, so here we sit now with Paul Manafort and Rick Gates essentially under house arrest. there's a political huge element here, and a constitutional element as well. I mean, you're a constitutional law scholar. What does the Constitution require in terms of, if you think about articles of impeachment, how much would have to be on the table for the Constitution to be shouting, you've got to do something?
Well, the articles of impeachment are appropriate under the Constitution when there's been a gross abuse of power connected to the exercise of the president's office. There's some open question, we don't really know, whether gross abuse of power on the way to the presidency by someone who is not yet the president would count. But let's assume for the sake of argument that distorting the election and running for the presidency counts as related to the office.
Okay.
If that's the case, then real abuse of power by the president or by Donald Trump, the candidate, would certainly be grounds for impeachment. And I think it would be very worrisome from the standpoint of our constitutional structure if nothing happened, if it came out that the president had colluded with the Russians, had tried to use Russian connections, for example, let's say, to break into Democratic emails by some analogy to the way that the Nixon campaign broke into the Democratic National Committee's headquarters, and Congress did nothing. That would constitute a crisis from a constitutional standpoint because we would be ignoring what the Constitution says. The reality, of course, would be that under those circumstances, many Republicans would say, we don't believe the evidence. We don't accept it. It's not clear enough. And under those circumstances, they would probably be able to say, well, we're following our oath to the Constitution because we just don't buy it. We don't believe this is what happened. And I have the strong feeling the Trump administration will keep on denying as long as it possibly can. So in order for us to be in a situation where it's clear that there has to be an impeachment, I think we would need crystal clear evidence of direct collusion between Trump and the Russians, specifically to distort the election results by committing crimes. Maybe we'll get that, but right now we can't at all be certain or confident that we will.
Maybe there's the bar. The investigation goes on. Very interesting developments this week, but who knows where it ends up. This has been really helpful in terms of clarifying, though, the parameters of what we're all in one way or another in the midst of right now. Noah Feldman, professor at Harvard Law School, constitutional law scholar there. It's great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for joining us, Professor Feldman.
Thanks for having me.
And Michael Warren, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Terrific to have you with us as well, Michael. Thanks a lot for your insights today.
Thank you, Tom.
Our thanks to Matt Zapatosky, covering this for the Washington Post, who joined us earlier, and to all of you for your questions and comments. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.